every year on the solemnity of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the universe, someone will say, it's the last day of the year. And every year I say, well, it's the last Sunday of the year, but there's still six more days, and now we're in this period of time between the Feast of Christ the King and the end of the year. Of course, the new year starts with the first Sunday of Advent, so this Saturday evening it will start the new year. So here we are, celebrating Christ the King. It's a celebration that never really ends, and it will be even more joyously celebrated after death. But we're still here. We're celebrating the feast of Christ the King, or this the reign of Christ the King. At the same time, we're living in the kingdom of this world. I don't have to explain. Today's a national holiday. That's according to the kingdom of this world, and it might not affect people who don't have jobs. But you know, if you have a job, today's a paid holiday, and if you're a student, you don't have to go to class today. And if you want to go to the bank, I'm sorry, banks are all closed today. It's Bonifacio Day, which confused us because we thought Bonifacio Day would be on Thursday, which is the birthday of Andres Bonifacio. And we even scheduled our Advent recollection on Thursday because we thought it was a holiday. And then we discovered, no, the holiday got moved from Thursday, the birthday of Andres Bonifacio and the feast of San Andres. It got moved to Monday, holiday economics. So we have a holiday today. That's the way it is in the kingdom of the world. No stability. The readings that we ponder today are beautiful, but also very challenging, because in both the first reading and the gospel, we get examples of people who are ready to depend entirely on God. It's the attitude we often describe as poverty of spirit. That recognition that everything we have is from God, everything we have belongs to God, and we belong to God. So we're wise to put our trust in Him. It's actually the Anawim spirit. And there's hardly a better Anawim representative than this poor widow in today's gospel. Widows, as we know from the Bible, are among God's favorites because they are the poorest. And this poor widow, who no one else noticed, was noticed by Jesus because Jesus, with the heart of God, has a special affection for the poorest. And He notices that she puts into the collection two small coins. Now, if it weren't for what Jesus said about it, that's all we would know, that this woman put in two small coins. We don't know why. We don't know what those coins are even worth, maybe a few pesos. What she was thinking when she was doing that. Was it that it was so worthless anyway, it didn't matter whether she had 2 pesos or not? Or was it an act of extraordinary self-denial, which is what it looks like to us? Or was it an act of extraordinary love, gratitude? We wouldn't know. Sometimes when I'm saying Mass in a poor section, for example, in the chapel in Pulo, every Sunday they have a practice of designating a certain sector of the neighborhood to make offerings. What do they call those BECs? There's a Tagalog term for that. KBP or something like that. Anyway, the sectors are, and so everyone brings an offering. And the typical offering is 20 pesos, because 20 pesos is something, but not very much. Now they're phasing out the 20 peso bill, so that means 20 pesos really isn't worth very much. But very often, when I receive the envelopes, I can tell some of them don't have a bill, they have a coin. So maybe a 5 peso coin, or 1 peso, 10 pesos. In other words, very small offerings. And whenever I receive them, I say, many of them are poor widows, but they're making beautiful offerings to the Lord. They probably know, how could they not know, that that amount of money doesn't make that big a difference to the parish? But they also know it's a gift from the heart. And I think that's how we can read this story about the poor widow. And that's certainly what Jesus teaches us. This poor widow put in more than all the rest. She didn't put in more than all the rest. She put in less than all the rest. She put in less money. So what is Jesus talking about? He's not talking about the money. He's talking about more of something else. Well, more of herself. More of her love. More of her security. More sacrifice. In other words, things that are much more valuable than money. That's what she puts in. And he explains that the others have all made offerings from their surplus wealth. They don't need it anyway. So it's no big sacrifice. Maybe they felt the sacrifice, because, you know, whenever we give something away, you can feel it. But not very much. Where she, from her poverty, has offered her whole livelihood. This is where the example of this Anuim is disturbing to us, because it seems to us like she shouldn't be giving away her whole livelihood. How is she going to live? The example then is challenging because it's a revelation of the attitude of a person who really trusts in God. It doesn't mean we have to give away, literally put in the box, everything we own, but it does mean we have to entrust to God our whole livelihood. We have to entrust to God our whole self, everything we have, everything we know, everything we hope for. It's a complete consecration. When we trust in God, we can do that joyfully, freely. It's very beautiful. But if you've ever tried it, you know that even if you make this complete offering of yourself to God, within 10 minutes, you've taken something back. That's what I find in myself. All my time for you, Lord. All my energy for you, Lord. All my possessions for you, Lord. And then 10 minutes later, I'm doing something that I would prefer to do rather than what God wanted me to do. Or I forgot what I was supposed to do. I got distracted. So we need this poor widow to set before us once again. What does total dependence on God really look like? It looks like this. What does the Anuim life look like? It looks like this. Total dependence on God. Everything for you, Lord. The motto of St. John Paul the Great comes to mind. Totus tuus. Totus tuus. All for you. Now, that was also a Marian motto. Okay. We see something similar in the first reading where the captives, these four young men of Israel, are in Babylon. They're not hostages exactly. I mean, now in the news, everyone's talking about hostages because of the siege of Gaza and the very flimsy ceasefire that's, I think, still in place. I'm not sure. They're hoping, there's a faint hope that it will extend beyond today. But anyway, this exchange of hostages or prisoners, these men are actually exiles. They're not hostages, because hostages, if they were free, they would immediately go home. But exiles don't have any place to go. Jerusalem has been destroyed, and these young men are in Babylon. And anyway, the king of Babylon says, let's take some of these foreigners and teach them our own language and culture so that we can get the benefit of their gifts. And so that's what happens here. These Daniel and the three others, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, are all chosen to be trained as members of the nobility, a council, for the benefit of the king, for the benefit of the Babylonian reign. And if you think about their situation as exiles, or if you want to call them refugees or immigrants, they're completely dependent on the Babylonians. They're completely cut off from their homeland, their culture, their families. They don't have anything. And so in that sense, they're very poor. And you could imagine, if they were thinking in a worldly way, they would not want to offend their captors. because that would only make it worse for them. But Daniel has this understanding that he doesn't simply belong to the king of Babylon, he belongs to God. He hasn't lost his identity, even though he's lost his homeland and his culture and his family. But he hasn't lost his identity as a child of God. And so he says, I'm not going to break the law, violate the covenant, just because this king wants me to have some special role. So he takes a very risky position to say, I won't eat the unlawful food. Just give me vegetables. Well, it works. It works. So, but the beauty of it isn't whether it works or not. The beauty of it is the absolute trust in God that we see in Daniel. And the others. They're gifted partly because they have natural gifts, but more because they are open to the gifts of God, to be instruments of God. And this is the way it is with people who are poor in spirit. Poor in spirit equals rich in the spirit. Poor in spirit meaning not dependent on natural things or human favors, meaning they can be better instruments of God. Now, the greatest example of poverty of spirit is Our Lady, Mary. And today, as you probably know, is the Feast of Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal. Many people have mentioned this to me, how Bonifacio Day lands on the Feast of Our Lady of the Miraculous Medal. So let's think a little bit about Mary. She's the poor widow. In fact, when Jesus saw the poor widow in today's gospel, maybe he saw something of the spirit of his own mother. Some people have speculated, maybe it is Mary. Maybe that was Mary. Of course it isn't, but she's a poor widow. She doesn't have anything, and she entrusts her whole self to God, even more than this widow in the gospel did. She gives from her poverty everything she has to live on. She knows she's a lowly handmaid of the Lord, and she says yes to the will of God. So this is the woman who appeared to St. Catherine Labouré on this day, November 27, back in 1830, so almost 200 years ago now. St. Catherine Labouré is a complete nobody, complete, uneducated, poor, young novice. I don't even know if she could read, I don't remember, but she was really among the poorest of the poor, and her community didn't expect much from her. Mary appears to her and reveals to her the image of herself. You know that image, Mary standing like this with rays coming out of her hands, and that's the image that is now on the, what we call the miraculous medal. So Mary says, have a medal made like this. Well, what's Catherine Labouré going to do about it? She can't do it. She tells her confessor, and he's the one who actually made the thing happen. Anyway, it was way beyond the capacity of St. Catherine Labouré and then anybody else either, because as soon as a few of those medals were struck and started to be passed around, people realized these are instruments of grace. Miracles took place through these little sacramentals. So it is a very striking thing how simple and how poor the instrument is. And the medals themselves are very poor. You can get a medal like that for, what, 50 centavos? They're practically free. Miraculous medals. You can buy silver, gold ones too if you want. But I mean, they're very, very simple. And they're everywhere. But they're instruments of God's grace. I'll just throw this out there. You know, we're changing our entrance to the chapel for the sake of the PWD. And that means we covered over that circle with the M. Was it right at the front in the pavement in front of the entrance? And so we said, well, now we have to make a new a pavement there with the pebbles. And so one of the suggestions was, let's use the M and the cross that's on the back of the miraculous medal. You know, that cross with the M at the base. And in the miraculous medal, there are the hearts of Jesus and Mary and a bunch of stars. And the one of the craftsmen working with the pebbles said it might be too hard to get those hearts in there. Maybe we'll just do the cross and the M. So we'll see if they can come up with that, the workmen. The point being that the entrance to the chapel should be something that moves our hearts to Jesus and Mary. So that's what that's all about. But back to the miraculous medal. It's at one of these cases where an image is given to us from heaven, like Our Lady Guadalupe, like Divine Mercy, like the Shroud. These are images that didn't just come up from a natural human effort. It was, they're gifts from heaven. In this case, Mary herself. Mary the poor widow, Mary the poor handmaid of the Lord, Mary the poor in spirit, who teaches us to follow in her footsteps so that we can draw closer to Jesus, who is our treasure, our wealth. So as we honor Christ the King, let us recognize our own poverty, but also our own absolute richness in Jesus and Mary.